This is Max Q, the podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for working artists in today's world. Multifaceted careers, time management, finances, finding balance between your life and your work. We explore that and more on the Max Q podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Mancier. In this interview, I speak with percussionist Chris Salvito and pianist Nicoletta Favari of Passepartout Duo. Nicoletta graduated with her master's degree from the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland in 2015, and Chris earned his master's degree from Peabody in 2016. They have been traveling and performing as a chamber music duo ever since. Making music that escapes categorization, the duo's ongoing travel around the world informs the multidisciplinary collaborations, instrumental compositions, and evocative music videos that constitute their work. Currently, they are in Iceland working with composer Hafdís Bjarnadóttir on a project called Sheep Music, where they will be performing for sheep throughout Iceland and the Faroe Islands. Hi, Chris and Nico. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. I'm really excited to hear about your life as Passepartout Duo and the travels that you've been on and the journey musically and artistically that you've been on. So to start, can you just tell us a little bit about what your life looks like right now?
Well, thank you so much for having us. That's really great. What our life looks like right now? Well, we're currently in Italy. I could say that for the past 6 years or so, we've been working together as a duo, as a musical ensemble, but also doing kind of a wider range of different artistic projects that have taken us to different places. We're currently in Italy. We're getting ready to travel on Monday to Barcelona for another project. And daily life right now looks like a lot of rehearsing, a lot of logistical planning, some things like that. I think largely what you'd expect from a musical ensemble on a daily basis.
Yeah, in some ways, the pandemic year and a half has not changed too much our normal activities. But of course, everything has been drastically slowed down and logistically, everything has become a little bit more challenging. But we have just reinvented ourselves a little bit. And of course, there were many less concerts, but a lot more of studio work and recording in process. So we cannot complain, of course.
Yeah.
Right. That's great. Can you tell me more about the duo itself and what it was before the pandemic? And you talked about reinventing. Well, how has that kind of influenced the work that you're doing now?
In some ways, the duo has the reinvention at its core, because we, for every project, we are somehow asking questions about the way that we work and what we do and why we do it, in any case. So that's something we are used to. But yes, the pandemic has challenged us for the travel aspects, because we generally move from project to project, country to country, every other 1, 2, 3 months. So of course, now that's not the case. But also, it's been interesting for us to develop a completely new aspect of our work, which happened at the right time and which has opened us to all the world of like synthesizers and building instruments. And yeah, maybe Chris, you can expand on that.
I think I can completely agree that this idea of reinvention or invention of oneself and one's own goals as an ensemble, that's really totally at the core of what we do, and that we're always trying to think really hard about why and how we are going to do what we want to do and what it is we want to do exactly, musically and artistically. And it's always about just working within the constraints that we give ourselves and that life gives us. And the pandemic is obviously a big part of that, but so is so many other things. And the pandemic kind of came at a time when we had at our disposition a really good studio situation, which was that we were in Shanghai at this residency that had really good facilities. And we were just kind of hunkered down there for extra months and extra months. And we were in the process of working on new music and kind of building instruments. So we sort of dived into this world of building electronic instruments. So we were just able to spend a lot of time on that. And there's like tons of online communities surrounding that. So that became both a source of joy and something that ended up being, I think, a little bit helpful to us and afforded us some extra opportunities. But also just our practice became a bit more introverted. You know, we just spent more time diving into the studio work and not performing as much. And looking back, it's a year with very few concerts, but it doesn't really necessarily feel that way in a lot of sense. Like it was still a very productive year. And yeah, take no issue with it.
I'm interested in also like how you got to this point with the duo as well. So basically looking back from graduating from school or being in school, what is this, like 4 or 5 years now to now, what prepared you to take this journey as an ensemble, or either in or out of school, to bring you to this point in your creative process?
Yeah, I wonder if it could be correct to use preparation, because I'm not sure we even feel prepared right now. And I'm not sure we even know what we're preparing for, because...
Sure. A different word may be totally appropriate.
I don't know what that word would be either. But for sure, a pandemic wasn't on the docket when we were...
Definitely not.
You know, so I think it's important to acknowledge just like luck and serendipity with a lot of these things. And yeah, when we were in school, we weren't necessarily, we had goals and ambitions. We took what we did very seriously, but we weren't necessarily specifically preparing for what we are doing now, because we didn't know what that would be. It's just that these things keep branching out and you keep seeing new doors and either opening them or not, or maybe they're closed or open for you. And yeah, we have very kind of specific aesthetic goals, and that we've always kind of chased that as like the paramount thing. And everything else that happens around that, it sort of just changes on the situation around us. But like in terms of more specific practical things, just about the way we started, was we met at a music festival. So if we had never auditioned for that, if we had never participated in that, we would not have met each other. And that is the source of what started everything. And then soon after that festival, when we were like really serious about playing with one another, we did a residency at the Banff Center. And that was another thing that we could plan to do, that we could prepare to do, that really launched us in a specific direction. And it was that residency at the Banff Center that really showed us the value of what artist residencies could provide for us and provide for all artists and musicians. And so we just said, oh, we want to be doing this as much as possible. And that really gave us this groundwork from which everything else kind of, it's sprung from that.
So can you describe in more detail, how do you support yourself as an ensemble? And what is the kind of work and process look like for you to create a project, to end up in a new place and make something new? Where does the inspiration come from? How does that all fit together for you?
Yeah, in terms of the business of it, I think it might be an overstatement to call it a business. Like it's pretty precarious at any given moment. But I would say that we have some, just being a couple, it helps us a lot actually, because the financial burden is less when you can share accommodation, basically. And the artist residencies have been massively helpful to us because they make the cost of living, it's much lower because you get support. Your living cost becomes an artistic cost instead of just a living cost, and that really changes a lot. But you can't count on having a residency completely 100% of the time. I think the main thing we try to do is just spend as little as possible. Like, we are just extremely, extremely cheap people in a sense, and I think it's much to our benefit. And I think you kind of have to be scrappy and hustle a lot to be an artist, no matter what you're trying to do. But also, it's because of that we can put 100% of our energy into the artistic process and not make aesthetic sacrifices because of just being distracted by money, which is something that is not something we have a choice or not as to whether participate in. It's just something that is demanded of us from the world. And that's one of the greatest challenges of being an artist, is figuring out how to navigate that while pursuing what you want to pursue aesthetically that fulfills you. And then not a lot of answers there, just a lot of questions.
Well, a lot of answers that also depend on so many specific cases, because Absolutely. If we, for example, had to live in the States, the economics would change so much. Mm-hmm. And like, it's very simple to think that we don't need to pay for the health insurance when we are living in Italy.
So I was thinking about how does this, like, the structure of the way you operate, traveling, going from residency to residency, project-based collaborations, how do those things inform the way you create art? And how does that inform, like, what inspires you? I mean, I would imagine traveling to different places, you probably become exposed to different cultures, different people, things that inform the way that you make music. And I definitely, when I listen to your music, I hear all these different things and I'm like, where does that come from? I want to know more.
That's really interesting. Well, thank you. That's really interesting. But I think that the act of traveling and the way that we are doing it kind of compartmentalizes the artistic process in a way that helps us become very prolific and stay very inspired. And that's because the residency, it gives you this opportunity to enter a space in a way where you feel welcomed as an artist. Like, there's this infrastructure in place where people are ready to introduce you to the place they call home. They're ready to set up collaborations. And at the end of the whole thing, there's a deadline. You know, at the end of 1 month, you have to produce something and show it. And I think that's, like, really the lovely thing about it, that's always pushing us to make work kind of at any cost. Like, you're here, you made this journey, like, let's make something really special. And every time we enter that space, we really want to leave with the absolute best version of the most distilled version of what we can do. And over the years, each time we try, it's just changing and changing and changing, and we're picking up different things from the people we meet. And then a huge thing that can't be understated is the other artists you meet along the way, because when you're meeting artists from other disciplines, you're always learning about their process and the way they work. They have a completely different cultural upbringing. They have a completely different practice. Everything about what they do is different. And you can think about how to apply those things to music, you know? Because many times we're the only musicians, and that's been tremendously valuable too.
With all of these different artists that you work with, how do you approach cultivating those relationships and making the most of them?
Yeah. So the way that we arrive at every collaboration, it's always going to be different. Every situation that we meet a collaborator in is a different situation. So I can try to give a few examples. And one hopes that it's something that's, like, kind of mutually beneficial in the greatest sense. But, you know, every time it's different, especially in the scope, some things are kind of smaller projects and some things are our bigger projects. So when we were in Beijing in 2019, we did this collaboration basically inside of 1 week with a painter there named Jia Jing. And so there was a massive language barrier, absolutely no Chinese from us, no English from him. So everything was done through Translate app on the phone, like 100% of the collaboration. And he kind of had this spark of an idea of, he's a painter, and that's like his profession. He's excellent at it, but he's also really passionate about like playing drums and making music, kind of like on the side. And he was kind of having this, I would say, waxing poetic about how much more passionate he is right now about music than about painting, and how it's really, really challenging. And he had this kind of dream of just translating his paintings into sound, like, directly. And so we started thinking about how we could do this in a way that was maybe interesting. And we had touched on this idea of data bending earlier that year. And data bending is basically when you tell the computer to read the file the wrong way. So you give the computer an image file and you tell it to read it as an audio file. What does the image file sound like? So that was kind of the starting point for this collaboration. And so we came up with this sort of live painting project where we were making this electronic improvisation based on what he was painting. And the paper was on this amplifier that was vibrating. And so he was painting based on those vibrations. So there was this kind of feedback loop of music and painting happening. And we did this inside of 1 week. And, you know, nothing was really 100% thought through, but we were really happy with the result. And it's something that, like, we just end up getting asked about it more than we're expected. Like, it just keeps coming up that people are interested in this one project, and it happened really quickly. And just kind of one of these sudden nice things that happen. And so that's one example of how a collaboration can happen between us. And then there are other ones where we're like planning trying to conceptualize everything. Like we're working with this Icelandic composer, Hafdís Bjarnadóttir, that we've had quite a long relationship with now, that she wrote us a piece a couple of years ago that we performed and recorded. And then because we were performing in the Faroe Islands, where there's more sheep than people there. There's like 70,000 sheep there and 50,000 people there. And Hafdís is super excited about knitting and wool culture. And Iceland also has this deep connection. So we had this funny question of like, what kind of music do the sheep want to hear? We're playing concerts for people right now. There's more sheep. We should just make concerts for sheep. So since then, we just decided to try and make this sheep music project. And it's just been this very long process. Now also prolonged because of the pandemic. Like, we were supposed to do it last summer. Now we're doing it this summer.
You're still working on the sheep
project. We're still working on the sheep project, trying to figure out exactly how this is going to happen. So many issues because of the pandemic with that too, because they're like, outdoor concerts, they also have animals, and like you have to travel between all these places and stuff. So and that one, there's like, it's the opposite of the other project, because there's way more talking than there is music making. The other one was just like 100% artistic, because it was impossible to talk. And then this one is like 100% talking, because there's like all this stuff we got to work through just to make the thing happen logistically and every how else. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but more I think down to earth, we could say that there's a couple of common features between our collaborations, let's say. So one is, for example, that we really, really care about deadlines, because it makes life much more difficult for everybody, I think, not to have deadlines and not to respect them. And then the other thing is documentation. So we always, and in any case, want to make sure that there is proper, beautiful documentation of the project, because no matter what we're talking about, it's always going to be useful for us and the other person. So that's something we care about. And then I think at a certain point, we also need to recognize that if it's your project and it's your art, you are going to be the person in the world that cares the most about it. You're not going to find somebody that cares more. So that is valid for collaborations, but also for management or for somebody curating your art or whatever. So you must be the first one vouching for it and really presenting it in the best way. And I think maybe the way that we have grown through collaborations and attempts and so on has also been partially parallel to the way that we were so exclusively working with composers first, and now we are maybe more, we have more diverse collaborations also, because we feel like this, what should be in balance in the collaboration between the composer and the performer in the general kind of collaboration that we know in the contemporary music world is not, we didn't feel it was very much in balance. And so that was kind of problematic for us as performers.
Mm, interesting. So putting it kind of everything on an equal playing field in terms of collaboration.
Yeah, it's great to be in projects where everybody can be an advocate for the work, that not some, that mm-hmm. there's not one or two people advocating for it, and then other people who are kind of like along for the ride doing a great job, but it's like, it's yeah. not their project. They're just like contributing to it. It's really nice when everybody is like the advocate for that project, I think.
Scaling back a little bit to look at the bigger picture, when you're moving from place to place, how far in advance are you planning your locations, your projects? 1 month, 2 years, 10 years? What are you looking at?
10 years would be nice. No.
That might be a little ambitious.
No. Well, it's changed a lot because of the pandemic, I have to say, because it's really not possible to plan the same way. Actually, right now we find ourselves spending twice as much time planning and having half the results we would before, you know? We need multiple plans in place, and like one of them is not going to work out. Maybe both of them are not going to work out. And we're ending up being pretty busy this summer, but like it all kind of came into place very late, and it's not what we expected to be doing. We had different plans in place, which is, that's just how it is these days. But in general, we're planning probably 2 years in advance for the general travels and the concertizing, but everything runs on a different schedule. You know, concert series have their own schedules, festivals have their own schedules, residencies have their own schedules. Everything needs to be planned at a different time. Like when you're going to pick up flights for this thing is a different time than when you're going to schedule it and everything like that. But that's like the logistical planning timeline. The artistic planning timeline, I think, is sort of different. And that can be a little bit more, it can be changing a bit more often, you know? And we can find ourselves in a situation where we're afforded time to just dive into an artistic project and just go 100% into that, even if it wasn't what was planned. And then there are other things that we're working toward, inside of a year or something like that.
Okay, let's see. There's so much that I want to dig into. I mean, and as a percussionist, I would love like that. Even that element of travel is fascinating to me because I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think there's actually a general message to be said about the kind of conservatory baggage you leave with, because there's this massive sense of insecurity sometimes to not have these instruments you were trained on all the time, because you're kind of comfortable behind, you know, a 5-octave marimba or a concert piano. That's like what you're comfortable on. But when we started out, it became clear very early on that the kinds of things we wanted to be doing did not coincide with using those instruments, because we wanted to play music anywhere for anyone, and that does not work with the concert piano and the huge percussion setup. And so there's been this gravity towards making these portable setups since we started. And it started first with a few pieces that we happened upon, like a piece by Chris Adler that was for toy piano and glockenspiel that we played in Morocco. We filmed this little video. And that's all we brought there was what we needed to play that little piece. And it was just a great experience. And we were like, why don't we just try to do this a little bit more? And then we were experimenting with just taking the vibraphone bars and amplifying them and kind of rolling them up and bringing them with us. And then for the piano, instead using like a 3-octave MIDI controller that we're still using. And then it evolved from there into building our own instruments, which are like electroacoustic things, percussion instruments, and synthesizers that we're building, basically. And yeah, we can easily trace the path from just this desire to downsize the instrumentation to what we're doing now. And so basically, we always have what we need to perform with us. And that's like the answer to how we do it.
That's amazing. I mean, and as someone who has also played a 5-octave marimba and had the joy of moving it from place to place, I can totally see the benefit of being able to make your setup that compact. And another thing that I have noticed in some of your videos is that you also include sometimes found objects or things in the place that you are, which I could imagine adds a whole nother dimension to the sound world you're able to create.
In some way, though, it was not only a logistical challenge and progression for us, all this instrument talking, let's say, but it's been a huge change of mindset and mentality, I'd say, because we went from being these graduates with a sort of, let's say, emergency to become pros at their specific instruments, and like trying to achieve this like over technicality maybe, or like something that is so specific to such specific acoustics in specific halls with specific instruments, to just being like kind of more musicians, I feel like, where you like music is such a malleable, living thing, and that just goes along with our life.
So I guess going back to that transition from where we came from as classical musicians to where you are now, what has surprised you most about this journey that has ensued following graduation?
So for me, it's been really a revelation to realize how not definitive the role models we had at the start turned out to be. So who we were looking up to when we just were graduating, they're not like who we are looking up to right now, because we have completely changed and our vision of the world has completely changed.
There are also people that we didn't even know existed before. Yeah. And I think that speaks to our own, it's something that we are calling our own personal cartography of the world. I don't know. Maybe that's something people say already. But like the collection of all of the places we've been and the people we've met and the things we've been exposed to just by reading or watching something, that is something that grows and compounds only with age and experience. It doesn't compound with knowledge. It's something that is practiced. And when you're in school, the sphere of things that are hitting you at any moment is very small, no matter how much you practice, you know, it's very small just because you're young. And all of the things that are inspiring us on a daily basis now are things that we hadn't even heard of. They were things that were happening, but hadn't even heard of them. And I think it has a lot to do with regarding ourselves first as just artists and musicians trying to put music and these projects into the world that we care about, and finding people who inspire us to do that better and endeavoring to do that, instead of just who is the closest person near to me doing the thing I want to do. Like, who is the person near me doing the thing I want to do?
So to that end, What would be your recommendation for students in school now? How can they spend their time, or how can they expand their own personal cartography while they're in school?
It's a good question. I think there's a certain shame around doing anything that's not just practicing your instrument in music school. And I think it doesn't need to be that way. I think I'm somebody who just loves learning about new things. And I learn fastest and I'm at my best when I allow myself to be excited about those things and just start using Google. Like just how to do X, and it goes off from there. And allowing yourself to be excited about those things and spending some concentrated time on them, I think it's fine. I think, yeah, the level of the music performance, it only matters when everything else is in place. You know, it has to be great, of course, but like everything else matters so much. Like the aesthetic choices you're making and the frame of the thing is really important. You know, it's not just the music. There's so much more to it.
Yeah, and about this, we've been recently thinking that we often don't stress enough how every decision we make is not just a utilitarian decision about who you collaborate and what you do and where you do it, et cetera, but it's also always, and at the same time, even if you don't think about it necessarily, it's always an aesthetic and an ethical decision as well. So if you, for example, commission a composer, you are also assuming or like partaking in the aesthetics of these composers and so on, right? So you need to do that more consciously, I think. And that's just an example, but in everything, any decision we will be taking. And so I think this reflection about what enters your sphere and if you are okay with it entering, has to be taken more purposefully.
Well, I just want to say thank you both so much for speaking with us today. I mean, this has been wonderful, and it's been amazing to hear about your perspective on all these different things, especially with all of your travels and honestly, all the perspectives that you probably have been exposed to over the last few years. So thank you, and I hope that you'll stay in touch with Peabody.
Thank you.
And everybody is welcome to be in touch with us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Passepartout Duo on their website, passepartoutduo.com, which is linked in the podcast notes. To close out our episode, here is a clip from their recently released album, Daylighting. You can listen to the full album at passepartoutduo.bandcamp.com. Thanks for tuning in. Theme music for the MaxQ podcast, created by Dimitro Nebish.